On this episode of Blue Dot, I talked to Kevin Sweeney about his life as a ranger at Lassen Volcanic National Park. We'll talk about bears, the wilderness, and the dark night sky. Time to head for the mountains. It's all new and all blue, just like Juniper Lake. Join us. Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Shlom, and thanks for joining us as we head up into the mountains and Lassen Volcanic National Park. Our guest is Kevin Sweeney, one of the park's most experienced rangers, and he really does range all over the park in winter and in summer. Kevin Sweeney, welcome to Blue Dot.
Hi.
I'd like to start with your origins. How did you become interested in being a National Park Service ranger?
Well, I guess like a lot of folks, you kind of find, sometimes you find yourself in a park and at a time in your life when you need that park to be there. And for me, that was right after September 11th. And I was in Joshua Tree and I was sitting quietly on a rock trying to figure everything out with this world and my own life. I just graduated from college. And it was it was a safe, steady place. And for me, it almost became a church. And from that point on, I thought, you know, we're really lucky to have these places. And that's when I decided that I'd hope to be one to help protect these sanctuaries.
What did you study in college?
I studied business. So I have a business degree, which is not a very conventional park ranger degree. I worked as a broker for a few years in San Diego and decided that, you know, there might be a better way. And it took a long time for me to get into the Park Service. I ended up volunteering in the Peace Corps for a couple years. And then through volunteering in the Peace Corps, I qualified for a Park Service job. And tried it on for a summer in Alaska. And about 2 weeks in, I said, yep, I think this is going to be what I do for the rest of my life.
When, how and when did you find yourself at Lassen Volcanic National Park?
Well, I was lucky enough in 2008, when the brand new visitor center opened, they needed somebody to staff it. And I called the park. I was calling every park that I could at the time. And I said, hey, my name's Kevin, and I'm looking for a job with the Park Service. And are you interested in talking to me? And as luck would have it, the person who was hiring for that job had just had a conversation 10 minutes before I called about how they were going to hire for the new visitor center. So a little bit of serendipity there about how I was lucky enough to get to work at Lassen. So while I was working at Alaska, I was calling all these national parks, and Lassen picked up the phone. So a few weeks later, I was hitting the road driving down from Alaska and found myself in Northern California. Very, very lucky.
Your wife, Amanda, is also a ranger at Lassen Volcanic National Park. Did you meet there at Lassen or before?
She is a ranger. She's our media specialist. And we actually met in Peace Corps. So we had a similar background in that we both had a business degree and were, I guess, running to find something more significant and ran into one another in Africa and said, hey, you know, those national parks are pretty cool that we've got back in the States. Why don't we give those a try? And so she was in Alaska with me, and we absolutely loved it and got incredibly lucky that we could both find jobs at a park that we love and adore.
You've been there since 2008. During that time, have you observed any evidence of climate change? Because that tends to appear more at high elevations and latitudes, while down here in the valley and at temperate latitudes, the effects are more subtle.
Well, it's hard because even 8 years is a relatively short amount of time. And when we're talking about climate change, we are talking about long range. And I think it's important folks know the difference between some weird weather stuff happening and then that long-term climate change. We are seeing some significant impacts on our trees. So the drought has certainly caused some high beetle infestation in the park. So that's one thing that we're very aware of and is very noticeable. We've also just noticed that the snow and the winters are a little more mild. Even when I started in 2008, we were used to some winters being a bit more like winter. And now We're kind of used to skiing in short sleeve t-shirts in January sometimes, so that's kind of noticeable. We've just kind of also noticed that our summers are a bit warmer. One of the great things about Lassen is that it's a respite from the heat in the valley, and our temperatures are rising a bit in the park too, and we've noticed that. But it's hard to say right away with just a few years of me being there, but I can say that some of the folks who've been there longer than I have certainly noticed some of these impacts.
And the bark beetles that you speak of, they're usually killed off or controlled by the colder winter temperatures, right?
Correct. Yeah. So it's normal to have these bark beetles. We're not in a situation where we've got these invasive bark beetles coming in. They're a regular part of the ecosystem. It's just that they're giving a little bit more time and a little bit more wiggle room in where they can survive. And that little bit more has caused an interesting situation in the park where we're having to monitor this a lot more now.
The previous superintendent, Stephen Gibbons, who had to retire due to health reasons, made it one of his goals to turn Lassen into a science park. Is that still an ongoing initiative there?
It certainly is. The Lassen Center for Collaborative Studies is a legacy that Mr. Gibbons has left behind, and is something that, you know, we all signed up for and are very excited about continuing. We're partnering with UCal Davis and a number of other institutes, and it's certainly strong and healthy, and we're really excited to see how that continues to grow and how those partnerships can even reach out down here to Chico and to other universities, not only in California, but hopefully throughout the world, because Lassen is such an incredible living laboratory for folks to come and study.
What are some of the things that make Lassen such a unique park for scientific inquiry? All of the national parks have science as a component, but what makes this park so special in that regard?
Really does. And some of the highlights that we're studying and working through that Lassen Center of Collaborative Studies have to do with astrobiology. So NASA is very involved in searching for possible early signs of life that maybe we'll find in other parts of our solar system or out on the other side of our solar system too. Some of the other work that's going on in the park, it has to do with archaeology and some of the early history in the park. And then finally, we're also a great place to come and study volcanology. And one of the great parts of Lassen is that you've got this recent volcanic history that can come up and be so easily studied.
Yeah, it was the last volcano to erupt in the contiguous United States before Mount St. Helens in 1980 with the great eruption of 1915, right?
That's right. And we had that great celebration just a couple years ago of that big, big eruption.
And as I always like to tell people, you can find just about every kind of volcanic landform on Earth at Lassen Park.
That's one of the really neat things to tell new visitors, too, is when they're looking at the landscape, to tell them that anything that comes out of the ground at Lassen is either a volcano itself or part of a volcano. And that's just pretty cool.
Another aspect I'd like to talk to you about is people exploring the backcountry. Is it just my perception, or has there been an uptick in people backpacking in the park?
We have seen a bit of an uptick, which is great. And some of those areas that folks are going to are the Summit Lake Loop and then out there at Butte Lake too. And so we are seeing folks getting more interested in backpacking, which is just wonderful that we're having that uptick.
That also leads to my next question about interactions with wildlife. What are you observing in terms of that, specifically with bears? And are bear canisters now the new norm at Lassen Volcanic National Park?
We have instituted that policy this year. It's the first time in the history of the park that we needed to put that in place so that folks need to carry bear canisters. And really, it has something to do with we've seen a little bit more bear interaction than we'd like to see. But really, the hard thing at Lassen is before we allowed people to bring or not to bring bear canisters, we asked them to hang their food. Well, if you've ever tried to hang your food in the park, it's really complicated. It's really hard to find a good enough tree to do that. So the bear canisters just kind of protects everybody. We had seen a couple years where we had some folks coming in, and unfortunately, they had left some backpacks out. And some bears got a hold of that and then really quickly learned that people equal backpacks and backpack equal food. And, you know, when they make that connection, it doesn't go away. And unfortunately, because of that, we've had to institute that bear canister rule. But luckily, it's not that big of a deal. We can have folks come to the park and rent them. So we do rent them at the visitor center and at the museum. So if you don't have one, don't worry. You can come up to the park and get one. And it's really not that big of a hassle to carry one.
For our listeners who are not backpackers, could you explain what a bear canister is?
Yeah, that's a great question. So bear canister is about it kind of looks like a big plastic jug, maybe about the size of 2 or 3 gallons. And it's got a screw top on it, and it's got a lock on that screw top. So if you could imagine maybe like a big pill bottle that has a childproof lock on it, that's kind of what it is. And luckily, bears aren't they don't have a very easy time getting into it. And that just kind of helps protect all of those scented things. So toothpaste, sunblock, anything that kind of has smell or might be interesting to a bear, we put it in the bear canister. And that way, if they do get to it, they just can't get a reward for finding it. And it helps keep those bears wild. And, you know, I should say, too, if folks are a little bit nervous about bears, Lassen's bears are almost all wild. I'd say without any exception, really, is that the bears, when they see you, they're going to take a look and they're going to run away from you. They might be a little curious because that's just the way bears are, but we're lucky in that they are still wild. They don't really want to interact with us, and so they'll end up finding their own way down the trail.
That was the thing I found really interesting when folks from the Dinner Party Download from American Public Media came to the park from New York and Los Angeles. They seemed equal parts curious and genuinely frightened by the prospect of a bear encounter. And I never think of that when I'm hiking in the park. A bear encounter is just an exciting thing to me, unlike grizzlies or black bears that have had too many human encounters. Could you talk a bit about why Lassen's bears aren't particularly dangerous?
Well, they're not. And, you know, Dave, it's interesting. I can actually sympathize with those city slickers because I grew up in Detroit. And when I first got to California and I had my friends backpacking in Yosemite or Sequoia, I thought, well, how do you even do that? What if a bear comes by? And then, you know, the trip's over because a bear's there. A summer in Alaska will change your opinion of that. And you learn that most of the time, these bears, especially wild bears, and I can't emphasize that enough, are going to see us is kind of scary. They're not really too interested. We're about the same size. We're not. They're especially if we're in a group of 2 or 3, it's just not worth their effort to even be around us. And so all of my experiences with bears in the park, and I've run across many, many bears. I've run across some mother and cubs, and it's all been positive. It's all been something where it's you take it away as lucky to have experienced it. And you know, we have not had a bear attack at the park at Lassen, and it is on account of those bears really kind of being a bit skittish. And when they see us, they want to turn the other way and run.
And that's the value in keeping the bears wild, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's why it's on us. There's really not such thing as a problem bear. It's more of a problem person that teaches that bear they can get food from us. And, you know, I'll tell you what, if you're spending a week or two in the woods eating grubs and grass and then you get a hold of a bag of Cheetos, what are you going to come after?
Yeah. You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm your host, Dave Shlom. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Kevin Sweeney. He's a ranger at Lassen Volcanic National Park in Northern California. And we're back talking to Ranger Kevin Sweeney from Lassen Volcanic National Park. Let's switch gears and talk about the other part of the park, the half that is after dark. Let's talk about Lassen as a resource for astronomy. When did you first get interested in making astronomy and the night sky a more prominent part of the Lassen experience?
Well, it happened pretty quickly. I realized that these night skies that we have at Lassen are just, they're almost spiritual, that when you're there in the middle of the night and away from light pollution, the feeling of smallness that you get under that deep, dark night sky when stars start to take on depth and you can almost start to make out colors in them, you realize that not everybody has that opportunity. And I think it was just spending time in the park itself and seeing that this is really something worth sharing. And getting the support from the park, you know, able to pick up a few telescopes, and it's just really taken off since then. I don't think I'm the only one in having that interest. You know, where we live now, it's harder and harder to go and see the stars, and it's something that people, when they visit a national park, it's on the top of their list is being able to sit under a starry night sky.
Well, then let's talk about your signature event, the Dark Sky Festival. When was the first one?
The first one was in 2012, so the upcoming Dark Sky Festival will be the sixth annual Dark Sky Festival.
Well, let's talk about this year's festival. When is it, and what are some of the highlights that you have planned?
Sure. The next Dark Sky Festival will be happening August 11th through 13th, and we're really excited to bring in some new special guest speakers, Derek Demeter from the Bueller Planetarium in Florida. He's a planetarium director, and he's a nationally recognized photographer of night skies. We'll be coming out to do a talk on Saturday night at Manzanita Lake. And we also have a local speaker named Brian Grigsby, who is at Shasta High School. And Brian is working with NASA on the New Horizons project, which is studying the far reaches of our own solar system. And so Brian will be giving a talk about that. I'm really excited about those keynote speakers. And then the other addition that we have this year is Dr. William Meem from Nevada is going to be giving a magic show called The Magic of Astronomy on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And he has a really cool show where he brings magic in to talk about the cosmos and help explain some of these, some of the science behind astronomy, which is just a whole lot of fun and a great program for families. And some of the returning vets that we have will be NASA astrobiologists. They'll set up a booth at SulphurWorks, and you can go and talk to them about searching for alien life, which is kind of a neat experience to be able to talk to NASA about looking for aliens. And we, of course, have the telescope set up. We'll have them Friday and Saturday at the Bumpus Hell parking area in Manzanita Lake. And at the Komiamani Visitor Center, we have a really unique program with a mobile observatory where we take real-time images of deep sky objects and planets, and we project them on a screen. And so if looking through an eyepiece isn't your thing, you can go there and bring a camp chair and a blanket, and there's music that goes along with that show. So there's really something for everything. We've got, you know, daytime events too, solar scope viewing and junior ranger programs. There's just a ton of stuff to do at the Dark Sky Festival. It's a whole lot of fun.
Are there any of your participants that are coming, are they planning to go on from there to view the total solar eclipse, say, like up in Oregon?
A lot of them are, yeah. So we planned the Dark Sky Festival to take place a week before the total solar eclipse. And that way we had a lot of astronomers say, hey, you know, I'll sign up for that. You guys are just a few clicks up the road for, or a few clicks down the road from seeing the total solar eclipse up there near Bend in Oregon.
Is there going to be anything at all going on Monday, August 21st to view the eclipse at the park?
Well, we really encourage folks, if you're interested in the eclipse, to head north and really get in that path of totality, because, you know, even if you're just a half hour away from the path of totality, it's not going to be the same thing. You really need to be right in the middle of that path. That being said, there will be a partial eclipse at the park. And if you happen to find yourself there, we'll have solar scopes set up. And we do have some really fun activities to help explain the eclipse. But really, I can't emphasize it enough. If you're going to be in the area and you can make it up to Oregon to be under the path of totality, that's really where you want to be.
Let's talk about the bigger picture of Lassen as a resource for preserving the dark night sky, because many of our national parks are fostering a connection to the darkness of night. Why has that become such an important resource in addition to the ones we always think of, like, you know, the lakes and the forests and the wildlife?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think, Dave, the reason that national parks are so important to dark sky preservation is that because we can't see them from our houses anymore. We as a society have moved towards bigger cities. And, you know, if you go into San Francisco or Oakland or, you know, even down here in Chico and you look out at the night sky, you're seeing just a fraction of what there is that's out there. When you visit a national park, which are typically removed from that light pollution, and you step out into a night sky, you realize what you're missing out on. And as a father with a little guy now who's 2 years old, it's kind of frightening to think how fast this light pollution has spread. And what if we don't have these places left? What if, you know, my son or my grandson doesn't have the opportunity to walk out and see the night sky? What are we missing, you know, poetically, scientifically, or even just culturally when we no longer have that? And I don't mean to be an alarmist about it, but it is something that's kind of interesting to see how this light pollution is spreading. And national parks are really these last islands of darkness that we have left.
And the real shame of it is mostly it's relatively easily preventable, isn't it?
It is. And I hope we can raise that awareness. This isn't something that, you know, is going to take hundreds or thousands of years. And we could decide to fix it tomorrow. I mean, that might be a little ambitious, but all it takes is properly shielding lights, pointing lights down, turning lights off when we don't need them. And we would be able to fix this problem. And we could have a starry night sky in Chico in a week or two if everybody decided that that's what we wanted.
Yes, I always like to point out that people have their outdoor lighting at night in order to protect themselves. But really, what you're doing is creating a pool of light that you can't see beyond that gives you a sense of safety. And I get that. But you can't see beyond that where the bad guys might be. And also, your lights are pointing upwards, and that's just ridiculous unless you're worried about paratrooper burglars.
No, I agree. If we can point our lights down, and a lot of times, we, like you're saying, the glare that they create really takes away that safety aspect. And I'd encourage folks to go and check out the International Dark Sky Association. They've got some great resources on night lighting. And, you know, it's something that we... If we all decided just to kind of put our lights the right way, we could fix it pretty quickly and bring those stars back. So the Dark Sky Festival really is a hopeful aim at just kind of helping people understand that this is something we could fix.
You ski in the park backcountry in winter and hike all over the place all year round, so you know it as well as anyone. What are some of your favorite places to go?
Sure. So without revealing too many of my secrets, I have to say the eastern side of the park up near the Butte Lake area is just really amazing. And it's harder to get to and it takes a little bit longer. But like anything in life, those things that take a little bit longer or a little bit harder to work for are usually the ones that are worth it. So the Cinder Cone area, hiking up and around there is just phenomenal. I just really, really love it every time I'm back that way. My other favorite places is hiking up Brokaw Mountain. I think we get sometimes drawn to wanting to hike Lassen Peak because it's the namesake of the park. But, you know, if I had to tell you secretly, if you asked me my favorite hike in the park, I'm going to tell you it's Brokaw just because you've got everything. You've got wildflowers and stream crossings and wide open vistas. And when you're standing on top of Brokaw to be able to look out at Lassen and Shasta on a clear day is just fantastic. And, you know, I really want to mention how wonderful the park is in the wintertime. It's kind of hard sitting down here in August thinking about that, but just 4 months away from now, hopefully we're covered in a fresh blanket of snow. And skiing in the park and snowshoeing in the park in the wintertime is just one of the best ways to experience it. And the other neat thing, too, is if you're lucky enough to come up during the week in the winter, you have the feeling that you get a whole national park to yourself, which is probably my favorite thing, if I have to be honest with you, is getting to think that I own the national park for a Wednesday in February.
Well, that definitely is a neat feeling. One of my favorite areas of the park is Juniper Lake. It's a beautiful blue mountain lake, and I love the hike up Mount Harkness because at the top is the historic fire lookout. A lot of people don't realize that the writer Edward Abbey, who authored The Monkey Wrench Gang and Desert Solitaire, worked up there for a summer, and in fact, he wrote the notes for Desert Solitaire while in the lookout.
Yeah, and gosh, Dave, thanks for bringing up Mount Harkness. That's my favorite view of the park, is when you're in that southeast corner looking at Brokeoff and Lassen and Cindercone from atop the lookout at Mount Harkness. And you know what else is a lot of fun? Is that's still a working fire lookout. So we still staff that. We still have some folks that are up there looking for lightning strikes and reporting any kind of smoke that they see. And the equipment that's up there is still all the same equipment that was there when Edward Abbey was working in that fire lookout. And you can hike up to the top. And if you're lucky enough to be there while it's staffed, you can maybe even get a tour of the inside of that fire lookout and really kind of stand in the presence of Edward Abbey, which for any person who's excited about wilderness, that is a pretty neat experience.
And the lookout is such a neat experience inside. It's very retro and rustic, and I would encourage folks to do that sometime. It's a great hike.
It is. As great as the view is and as great as the lookout is, the hike itself is just fantastic. It's a wonderful hike up the side of that mountain.
If there's one thing that I could encourage visitors to the park to do, it would be to get off the road for a while. Go hike on a trail, or you don't even have to do that. Just walk off the road a couple hundred yards, and you experience a whole different aspect of the park. As great as that audio tour is, that's even better.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. Listen to the audio tour on your way to getting off of the road. And yeah, like you said, if you can walk, you know, just a few feet and just kind of be there and get that feeling of wildness, that's what the park is all about, is protecting those wild places that are so important to who we are.
That brings up another aspect that I really love, and that's the resource of the quiet natural landscape. You get off the road and you hear the bubbling and hissing of the geothermal features, or the lovely sound of running water and the breeze through the trees. It's that wonderful natural quiet.
Yeah, and I think we're missing that in our daily lives. And one of the things I really like to help visitors experience is sitting still and sitting quietly in nature. And we don't get to do that very often. And, you know, even just a 5-minute peaceful time next to a trail or next to a creek, boy, that can do something for the spirit.
It really can. One of my favorite things to do with visitors is take them someplace quiet, have them shut their eyes for 2 minutes, and I time it for them. They're just amazed at the sense of natural quiet, what that's like, and they don't get that in their normal lives. We're so bombarded by media and screens and the cacophony of roaring engines and traffic that's just a wonderful thing to experience.
You know, we could list a ton of different health benefits of going and doing just that. And I think really, if you have the time to drive up to the park, and if you don't have the time to go on a full hike, or even if you're on a hike, just spending a few minutes quietly in nature is something that maybe we could all do a little bit more, and we might be better off for it.
And it's been clinically proven to have health benefits.
Indeed.
Well, Ranger Kevin Sweeney, it's been a joy to talk to you.
Well, likewise, Dave. Thanks for having me down. It's always a fun time talking about the park with you.
Thanks to our guest, Kevin Sweeney from Lassen Volcanic National Park. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. Our communications coordinator is Casey Gardner. Follow us on Twitter at NSPR News or me at Dave Shlom. Our co-producer and engineer extraordinaire is Mr. Nolan Ford on the board. Our theme music, Big Wave Dave, was written and performed by Matt Schultz of New York City. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.